Good morning. Welcome to the Australian Early Finance Briefing for Thursday, July the 16th, 2020. My name's Nick Hurley. Starting with the Westpac Consumer Confidence Survey, it's come back negative, down 6% to June. And that's on the back of a lot of the coronavirus lockdowns in Victoria and the scares in Sydney. Interestingly, it's still up on April, which was the lowest reading in history. It's up 16% relative to April. The biggest fall on a state basis was, surprise, surprise, Victoria, which was down 10%. Moving to consumers in the United States, the Wall Street Journal is reporting that this recession, this coronavirus-triggered recession, is contrasting to those previous in terms of consumer durable goods purchases. They're actually up. So things such as motor vehicles and things that are designed to last more than 3 years are actually up, when typically in recessions they are down. And that could be a result of these government handouts and this stimulus the US is applying. But it's worth noting that consumer durable goods only account for 7% of the US economy. It is largely a services economy, so services will need to recover if we're going to see a turnaround in the United States. Consumers increased their spending in May on services by 5.4%. And a Commerce Department report due out on Thursday on retail spending, which covers cars but not houses, is expected to show a June increase of 5.2%. So certainly some positive signs there. It'll be interesting to see whether it's hit by this, the expanding outbreaks we're seeing in Florida, particularly in Miami and in Texas. Moving to the coronavirus vaccine progress. There's rumours on the ITV website this morning that AstraZeneca, which they're the partners with the Oxford vaccine trial, that they're expected to come out with another announcement in a medical journal of positive news on the vaccine they're developing together. AstraZeneca's already up 4% today in London trading. So it's exciting news there. The Oxford trial is already one of the most advanced of all the vaccine trials in the world at the moment, and AstraZeneca is already in the process of establishing mass production of that vaccine, even though it's not proven as yet, but in the hope that it will be ready to deploy as soon as the three phases of the trials is released. Also, in the news yesterday was Moderna, which is the sort of the leading US vaccine. It released results of their phase one trial that showed in all 45 people evaluated, the vaccine induced the desired immune response. The researchers said that the study reinforced their decision to take the shot into a large, decisive clinical trial, which phase three trial, which is due to start on the 27th of July. Moderna is up 16% pre-market today. The trial was found to induce mild side effects in almost all the patients given the larger doses of fatigue, chills, headaches, muscle pain, and pain at the injection site. So it's exciting there to see what impact these sorts of announcements will have on the broader market, where what will happen when, let's say, AstraZeneca or Moderna says, look, we've passed all three phases of trials and we're ready to go. Will there be a upside tail risk event? That's certainly something to consider when a lot of the narratives at the moment's focused on, you know, this bubble's about to burst, but what about if it is only yet to take off. Tying these two topics of coronavirus and consumer confidence together, The Economist had an article on the impact of the sort of the extent of the severity of the coronavirus in particular regions and its impact on consumer confidence. The University of Chicago has found that a number of deaths in a particular area is associated with a lower consumer activity, which sort of isn't terribly surprising. They also say that the confidence can also be shaped by the time spent under lockdown. So Norway took just 10 days to halve the intensity of its lockdown from the peak level, and that obviously had a better impact on consumer spending. Other European countries took 10 weeks, and that had a bigger negative impact. So that's probably a good measure for what we can expect to see in Victoria with the lockdowns there. We may see a much slower recovery after this round two going forward. Okay, moving on to the topic of corporate debt, which is quite a pertinent issue with the downturn in the economy at the moment. It's something probably most pronounced in the US, but certainly here in Australia, Virgin Airlines has sort of succumbed to its enormous debt pile. Hertz Rent-A-Car in the US has drawn a lot of attention to corporate debt. Interestingly, the companies in the US now owe $10 trillion. So the debt book is $10 trillion, which is equivalent to 49% of US economic output. When you combine that with other forms of business debt, such as bank loans, etc., for partnership and small businesses, that figure increases to $17 trillion. So an absolutely phenomenal number there. Interestingly, just at the end of last year, the International Monetary Fund issued a warning saying that there's as much as $19 trillion of corporate debt globally that is vulnerable if there is a material slowdown in the economy. And that's certainly something we're seeing at the moment. So why is there so much debt? You may not realise, but when you actually think it through, compared to equity financing, there's a lot of tax incentives to debt. So, you know, with equity financing, there's, in the US anyway, there's double taxation. You pay corporate taxes, then the shareholders pay tax on the dividends. Australia, we have the franking credit system, so it's not quite the same. But in the US and here, interest is tax deductible. That does apply in both economies. So there's that incentive for companies to take on debt. And famous Harvard professor Michael Jensen has argued that debt financing keeps executives honest by forcing them to meet quarterly repayments instead of squandering it on initiatives that will just sort of shoot up the share price, which is obviously what a lot of executives' remuneration is tied to. So in the US, this sort of debt addiction, you could call it, has sort of formed over the last 50 years. But it has had a sort of dramatic change in how the US economy functions. It channels savings into financial capital that fuels growth. They say it arguably makes America more competitive, as public companies have slimmed down or gained focus, and private equity firms have been able to come in and sort of slim the fat from companies, make them take on appropriate debts, etc., and sort of, you know, move on and leaving that company in a sort of stronger, more focused position. But as we've seen with the Virgin Airlines saga here in Australia, there will be a lot of companies in the US like Hertz that need to restructure, and the Financial Times argues that private equity firms, although they've been involved in leveraging up a lot of these companies, and we've seen that here in Australia as well, that they are perfectly placed to come in and do the chopping. That was University of Chicago Professor Stephen Kaplan has said that. And that is certainly what we've seen here with Bain Capital and Virgin Airlines. They're ready to come in and cut thousands of jobs and turn around businesses. And obviously can see a huge potential to make profit there, particularly when the existing debt holders will only get a tiny bit of their money back. Moving to the markets now. As mentioned earlier, the AstraZeneca news seems to have buoyed markets a little bit. 40 minutes after the US has opened, the S&P is up about 83 basis points. The Russell index is up almost 3%, so that's probably a better reflection of the companies that are sort of more exposed to the US economy than the big mega techs in the large cap index. So very positive there. And moving to currencies, the Australian dollar is up back above 70 US cents, which is good. Coming up later today in Australia, we have the employment figures for June. We're expecting the unemployment rate to rise from 7.1% to 7.4%. And that is your early finance briefing for Thursday.
This podcast is for investment professionals only and should not be relied upon by private investors. The podcast is provided for informational purposes only and does not constitute financial advice. The values of investments can go up or down, so you may get back less than you initially invest.